Where's Jesus? This is really for you, Rachel, at least the beginning a little bit. A trip down memory lane. Yeah. A few years ago, Laura and Joshua, Rachel and I, took our last family trip together, just the four of us, to Universal Studios in Florida. I think the biggest hit of all was a tramway that used to go along, and we called it Wally. We used to talk about that. It was a lot of fun, although I did manage to get pretty nauseous on the Harry Potter ride at Universal. I really did. At Universal Studios, among all the rides and other attractions, there was a restaurant there called Bubba's Shrimp House. And that name, of course, comes from the famous movie called Forrest Gump. I don't know how many of you have seen that movie. There's Forrest up there. But Forrest gets drafted into the army, and he meets Bubba, his buddy, and Bubba begins to regale Forrest with all kinds of shrimp recipes. In that restaurant in Florida, they had a young woman who was going about giving out prizes to people who could answer trivia questions about that particular movie. A little did she realize that Forrest Gump is my son Joshua's favorite movie. He can quote all kinds of different lines from it. And the young lady dropped a question on us that, boy, I didn't know if I knew I couldn't come up with the answer. But without missing a beat, Joshua gave the correct answer and he won a prize. I understand why Joshua likes that movie so much. I get it. There's a great deal to commend it to us. There are themes of love and loyalty, and there's watching Forrest Gump go from one incredible adventure to another. Many of us can quote at least one line from that film, such as, Mama says, Mama says, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get. I would have been great to have Joshua here. He's not feeling well either. To imitate Gump, he used to be able to do that quite easily. There's a funny part in the movie, this Oscar-winning movie, where Gump, who is upset because his beloved Jenny has left him again, he begins to start running. Do you remember this? He runs across the county, then he runs across the state, and eventually, he runs clear across the country. He's quoted as saying in the film that he sleeps when he's tired. He eats when he's hungry. But generally, Forrest just runs. And over time, people start to get kind of interested in him. And they start asking questions about why this guy is running. As he reaches the coast, he turns around and crosses the country once again. And people start asking him why he's running, and Forrest doesn't really know why he's running, other than he likes to run. On about his fourth crossing of the country, followed by quite a crowd of other runners, he suddenly stops really in the middle of nowhere. And when asked why he'd stopped, he simply states, I'm tired. And without a second thought, he makes his way home. So what was the point of his running? The reality was there really wasn't any point at all, other than maybe it helped him cope with the grief he had over losing his beloved Jenny. Have you ever noticed when it was read today how much running there is in the gospel lesson before us? It's an exhausting text to read. Everybody in that passage is running somewhere. It's an odd thing because there's very little running mentioned anywhere else in the Bible. But here, everybody's running. And why on earth is everybody running around? And why on earth is everybody running around in the most unlikely of all places, a cemetery? Now, I've been on a number of cemeteries. In fact, I worked in one cemetery for a whole summer, and except for the odd jogger on occasion, I have rarely seen anybody run in a cemetery. In cemeteries, I've noticed we walk quietly, slowly. Let's be honest, with some apprehension. But in this text, everybody's running among the tombs. Now, running's not a foreign concept to us. I get that. I see people running just about every morning on my way to the church office, and they got their jogging suits on, and they got their, do they still have iPods or whatever they're called, stuck in their ears, and they're running. And I've noticed most of the time, they don't seem very happy to be running. Have you noticed that? They got this great pained look on their face, but they keep running, and they keep going. I've also, in my lifetime, seen people running around offices in businesses like their pants are on fire. I think they must be very busy, or maybe they're trying to look busy. Oh, don't get me started on Pearson Airport. My goodness, people have to make a connection between Gate 1 and Gate 60. And they're trying to be faster than Donovan Bailey. And they're moving. I've seen parents running from work to school, soccer practice, and then maybe to some church event. And like with Forrest Gump, I gotta ask myself, why are they on the run? I'm not sure most of those I see running even know why they are running. But it seems imperative that they have to pick up their heels and make tracks. One thing I rarely see, maybe never, is people running for the sheer joy of it. No one seems to enjoy the speed they are expending to get to whatever it is that's so important. We have an expression that comes from Lewis Carroll, don't we? Chasing the white rabbit from the book Alice in Wonderland. It refers to the white rabbit who was constantly consulting his watch, all the while shouting out, I'm late, I'm so very late. And Alice wonders, rightly so, late for what? And she follows him down the rabbit hole, beginning the story. And chasing the white rabbit has come to mean that we are chasing something without even knowing why. And again, it seems nobody enjoys the running they are doing. Even if they believe it is important, except for one group of people, children. If you take a group of children, especially young children, and you turn them loose, they will run. Not because they are being chased, although they will giggle with great glee if you decide you're going to offer up a chase. They enjoy running not because they're overly committed, or because they're trying to get their heart rate up or their waistline down. They run because it's fun to run. They feel empowered somehow the faster they go. It is that childlike spirit of running that seems to pervade our Easter story today. The running that we read about has a light-footed feel to it. Feet that were wounded, scarred by all the experiences of life, are suddenly set free, and they're running. We may have trouble really understanding and appreciating what's happening here. But three individuals got their feet moving, got their hearts racing for joy and hope and faith. Consider, if you will, how monumental a shift occurred in the hearts of those in our gospel lesson today. Mary Magdalene, who had witnessed firsthand the horror of the crucifixion, is just wrought with crushing grief. I'm sure in her mind and heart, they were flooded with questions about why did this have to happen to someone that she loved so greatly? Someone who was clearly non-threatening to everybody. How could such a miscarriage of justice be carried out on someone who was clearly in touch with God? Someone who could perform miracles like exorcisms and healings and even raising people from the dead. Mary Magdalene was believed to be someone Jesus delivered from demons herself. She adored him. She adored Jesus. Her world would have been turned upside down by the crucifixion. We read that she comes early in the morning to the tomb, even before the sun is up. And she's not running at this point. She's just making her way. After all, the dead aren't going anywhere. She comes to pay her respects. She comes to grieve. She comes to remember. But upon arrival, she sees something. Something's not the way it should be. The tomb is empty. Stone is rolled away. And all of a sudden, her pace quickens and she runs off, I mean runs off, to report this to the disciples. We read further that Peter and John join in the running. They run back to the tomb, not sure what's happened. Where is Jesus? And looking into the empty tomb, Peter couldn't make sense of it. John is recorded as saying that when he came into the tomb itself, he believed. Later, Mary encounters the risen Jesus, and she runs and declares to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." What makes you run? What gets your feet moving fast? Does joy feed your need for speed, or does obligation? This world, I don't know how you feel about it, but this world seems to be getting faster and faster all the time. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, I don't know. We were promised a long time ago that technology, as it advanced and society developed, we would have more leisure time. We would have more opportunities to enjoy life, but it's like it's getting worse. 40-hour weeks are now 50-hour weeks, or even more. You and I, we have fewer children than our parents did, but we seem to be expending enough energy like we're caring for 10 little ones. I don't even know if they still have them. We used to have Blackberries. We got cell phones. We got tablet computers. And still we complain we haven't got enough time. And we're exhausted. Let us be honest. We are running. And we're moving without an awful lot of joy. Let me suggest for your consideration that we make a serious effort to examine our reasons for running through life. Why do we work, play, and socialize at breakneck speed? Can it be that we think the more we do, the more value our lives have? I bet that's truer than we would admit. It is a danger to our souls to fall into the trap of thinking that our worth, our purpose, even our salvation are somehow tied to our being busy. Consider how fearful we are when we worry that people might find out that we're not busy at all. In several companies and businesses, there are people who are basically doing what we call busy work. Trying to look indispensable to the company so they will not be seen as redundant and laid off. Could it be that we've come more to hope in our own abilities and the capturing of more opportunities than we do in the hope that made Peter John, Mary run through a cemetery. I'm mindful of a story, it's a powerful story, about a woman who was doing her last minute Christmas shopping in a crowded mall. And you all know what that's like. Man, she was tired of standing in lines. She was tired of fighting down long aisles full of people looking for that gift which had been sold out days ago. Her arms were full of bulky packages when the elevator door opens for her and the elevator was full. But the occupants of the elevator, they grudgingly tighten ranks to allow a small space for her and her load to get on the elevator. And as the doors close, she blurts out, "Whoever is responsible for this whole Christmas thing ought to be arrested, strung up, and shot." A few others nodded their heads and grunted in agreement. And then from somewhere back in the elevator, a single voice sounded out, "Don't worry, they already crucified him." Where is the joy in your hasty pursuits? Where is it? Can it be that we are like Mary, so overcome by the distractions and the pain of life that we cannot recognize when Jesus is standing right in front of us? Can it be that we are so frightened to stop our hectic pace that we fail to pause and see the wonder of life? Wherein lies your hope? Is it in something your hands have created, your car drove you to, or your television entertained you with? How fast do we have to run through life before it has any significant meaning to us? Dare I suggest for even a moment that we're already running through cemeteries? Running among the monuments to failed human achievement? Running among or from buried dreams and dashed hopes? Maybe we're running so hard through life because we hope somehow in our running we could catch just a little bit of the sacred. Catch that one thing or that one person that means so much more than what we currently possess. Let me say that again to you. Maybe we are running so hard through life because we hope to catch or to hopes to somehow catch the sacred or the eternal. Today, of all days, is the day the world must stop its hasty race to nothing and start to quicken its pace to the one source of hope that all of us can cling to. Easter is a day to remember and celebrate that the powers of this world, whether they're political or religious or economic or social or psychological, do not have the last say in our lives. That even in the very place, a cemetery that screams of despair and loss, there is a reason to run for joy. How long has it been since we felt breathless in trying to tell the world, "I have seen the Lord"? It was in 1912 that music publisher Dr. Adam Gable asked C. Austin Miles to write a hymn that would be sympathetic in tone, breathlessly tender in every line, and one that would bring hope to the hopeless, rest to the weary, and downy pillows to dying beds. Does that not sound like what our busy lives and busy hearts seem to be crying out for? Hope for the hopeless. Rest for the weary. See Austin Miles, clearly inspired by God from his reading of John chapter 20, the very passage we read this morning, composed a hymn that is probably only second in popularity to the old rugged cross. And although to some of our modern sensibilities there, we might have some difficulty with the words, the point in the hymn is still valid. And when he was thinking about Mary's two trips to the garden on that first Easter day, he wrote the following, or composed the following. I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses. The voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, no other has ever known. He speaks, and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing. He walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. I'd stay in the garden with him, though the night around me is falling. But he bids me go through the voice of woe. His voice to me is calling. He walks with me and he talks with me and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. Maybe before you and I, we run one step further. We need to stop and listen to the voice calling out to us. Maybe before we run with joy, we need to be transformed by the hope that cannot fail. A hope born out of Christ's resurrection and discovered by those who dare to run towards it. So, are you running towards hope, or are you chasing white rabbits? Easter offers you that choice. Come, my friends. Christ is ready, willing, and more than able to walk with you, talk with you, and to tell each one of you, you are his own.